Gain energy and feel great. Try Andro 400, the safe, natural, and affordable way to boost your testosterone.
The hope, done sensibly, is that the incentives for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenue.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And welcome to Wednesday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand in the Allstate Skyline Studio. You heard the voice of Terry Savage. She'll join us in just a second or so. The Farmers Market, the Green City Market for Chicago, kicks off on Saturday. They're open year-round indoors, but their outdoor market starts on Saturday. Thought that'd be a good time to check in with them and to see what vegetables are ready. What are we at? Asparagus, maybe? That's probably about it. Maybe some early lettuce, but Melissa Flynn will be here later. And Frank Senna, too, from Crane Chicago Business. You know, they've got another story about vacant retail space in the area, and a lot of them are the big department stores that are going empty. We've talked about this from time to time, but we'll check in with Frank to talk about what's coming to a mall near you. It might be a bulldozer, but let's start by saying hello to Terry Savage, who joins us on phone line this afternoon. Terry, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Good to be with you always, Steve.
So the Dow was up earlier. It sort of paired some of its gains as they wait for the Fed decision a little bit later today. I gather in the emails we've had back and forth, you're not expecting too much. What are we looking for from the Fed today?
That's so interesting. I think the best comment on what the Fed might do, and I have to give credit because it was clever, was Dennis Gartman, whose daily newsletter said, I think the press release for the Fed should just say, ditto. As in, same thing right. as last month.
So you can't make any mistakes. You can't over.
Exactly.
Right.
It's generally assumed that the Fed does not want to shake up the markets. The Fed does not want to change policy, even though they might be, you know, thinking along the lines of maybe the next move is easing instead of their, you know, it was only a few months ago that they were thinking of raising rates. But basically, as Gartman said, they probably just ought to say ditto. They may comment a little bit about how much is off the balance sheet, which is to say they're not tightening anymore by buying back securities and by selling securities. And there might be a little bit about inflation. I think that's what everybody's wondering, because there's been a lot of money put out there. The Fed's tightened a little in the past. There was all of us, myself included, thought, my gosh, all the money they printed over the last decade to get the economy growing, where did it go and why is it not showing up inflation? So that's what people are waiting for from the Fed.
Did the Fed and their rhetoric contribute to the sell-off in December?
Oh, you saw Jeremy Siegel.
I did, yeah.
Publicly about a couple of interesting things lately. Jeremy Siegel is the stock guru. He's just widely respected, and he said what everybody else has been saying about the Fed, that they literally, with their, not just the tightening, but the announcement that they were going to keep tightening, really triggered the fourth quarter collapse, and which ended in that horrible stock sell-off on Christmas Eve. You know, we're up 15% for the year, but we're probably, I would just have to guess, about 18% from that horrible, record-setting down day.
That's what it says, in fact. It rallied nearly 18% over the past 4 months. It's the best start for the S&P 500 in the past 32 years.
Okay, so you know that old saying, sell in May and
go
away.
Right.
I want to preempt you from asking about that. I have no idea.
Can I tell you something? So I'm looking at, there's an article about that today, and I'm like, oh, I ask Terry about that every year. I'm just not going to do it this year.
Oh, and I walked into the trap of trying to get ahead of you. Okay. And then, you know, nobody knows. This is, these are unusual times. The economy, the jobs number today was absolutely spectacular. I mean, a huge, like almost 50%, 40% anyway, over the estimates, 275,000 new jobs. And they were everywhere. They were in service. They were in professional services. They were in education. They were in goods-producing jobs, that was which is manufacturing and mining and construction. That was up. It's just been a terrific across-the-board increase in the economy, and I can't come up with a reason why it shouldn't continue.
The
economy and the market aren't always inextricably linked, but the economy's moving.
You're referring to the ADP report today, 275,000 private sector jobs created. Now, you've probably read, as I have, that even Moody's Analytics said that a lot of the increase here, and this number was sort of technical, and it might be a little inflated, right? They think when the government comes out with its report on Friday, it's probably going to be a good deal lower than this.
Well, the unemployment numbers typically don't coincide with this report, but this is a real current report from the economy, and the unemployment numbers are a little bit anecdotal and a little bit behind. Look, the bottom line is, I'm not going to debate the facts. None of us should, but the trends are clearly toward economic growth. Now, I mean, you tell me why. The rest of the world isn't doing great, so it's not like they're giving us a boost. You have to, I think, say that the tax cuts worked. And I know, I mean, they weren't tax cuts for everybody, and especially people who live in Illinois and pay state income taxes. But in general, that line you always run at the beginning of the show? Well, the idea is that done right, they'll cut taxes, it'll create economic growth, and that'll create jobs and bring in revenues to the Treasury. Well, that looks like for this moment, that's exactly what's happening.
So you think the tax cut was done well, was done right? The job creation is a result of that. But look at the numbers.
And look at consumer confidence. That was out was that yesterday or the day before?
But wait, I didn't finish my point. Okay. Let me finish. Even though a lot of us who paid taxes ended up paying, you know, more at the end of the year or didn't get as much of a savings as we thought, you're saying that here's the other side of that benefit, and there's been a real benefit.
Right, that was technical, as Mark Zandi would say. Right. That was just a technical thing with the numbers. But the fact of the matter is, you know, and I personally, you know, took that hit too, but the fact of the matter is that when you create those incentives to grow and build businesses and you get economic growth. And, I, you know, it's strange because I said that was the idea. Well, this is the reality.
Terry Savage is on the phone line. Oh, one more. So everything's looking good. There was a report out today about U.S. manufacturing activity, and that slowed a little bit more than expected. And the experts are saying that could be a worrisome sign of things to come. What do you make of that?
Well, there's always something to worry about. I'm really focused on today. And today you've got businesses crying for employees. And you know what that's done? That's not only done, created middle-class jobs. That's allowed people, women, and for sure, and people with disabilities, and people who really want to work, and a lot of seniors, to find jobs. They may not be the same jobs they had before, but it's certainly created demand for people who are willing to work and have skills or brain power to put to work. And so I think that's just about the most optimistic thing going on in the economy today. I don't know how long it lasts, but I keep my fingers crossed.
You said there's always something to worry about. You know what I'm worried about?
The commercial.
No, I'm worried about student loans, and we'll talk about that after the commercial.
Okay.
All right, finals this week. You've got maybe graduation next week. In 2 weeks, your graduation party. And before the cake is stale at your graduation party, Terry Savage says you should be looking at your student loan payments. Terry,
I know. That's a downer.
Wow.
I know, but this is really important, and I hope that this discussion helps parents of high schoolers recognize just what a tremendous burden it is when the day of reckoning arrives, which is 6 months after the day you graduate, but for sure don't leave it till the last minute.
And so you're saying that there are several ways to set up payments, right? Or just to, you know, I think, and I have to admit, in my house, I kind of had my head in the sand when it came to student loans. Sharon handled it. Emma and Noah have handled it. And I haven't been involved in the day-to-dayness of it. But I do know that, it's easy to accumulate these things. It's not so easy then to figure out where to pay them or how to pay them or how to get started paying them.
Exactly. It's sort of a blind thing. But I'll tell you, the first stop for federal student loans, the first thing is to find them, really, literally. You've been getting money, and it comes into your school, and you applied every year, and you got aid. Where are they?
It sounds silly, but it's really true.
It's true. You haven't been getting a note every month from your lender, so now you have to catch up with them. For federal student loans, you go to studentaid.gov. You log in with your federal student aid credentials, and you'll see a summary of your loans, and next to that, a box marked servicer, lender, guarantee, da-da-da-da-da. Click on that. You'll find your loan servicing company for each loan because they may have different loan servicers. You have to let them know. The first thing, at least right after graduation, you don't have to decide exactly what your plan's going to be, but you should contact each servicer and give them your current mailing address and email.
Are they not going to contact you?
They're going to try to contact you, absolutely, but you may not remember whether you put your dorm as an address, when you were each year, or your family moved or something like that. So the first thing, now, private student loans, the really easiest way to find them? Just get your free credit report at annualcreditreport.com. The lenders will all be listed separately, and you'll see the balance of your loan outstanding. So you can contact the private student loan lenders, and they will also contact you, but you just make sure that they know where to reach you. By the way, your PLUS loans for your parents don't show up in this database. Your parents will find theirs on their own credit report.
All right, so you can set up different ways to pay them back, right? It's generally a 10-year payment plan?
Okay, look, this is the biggest decision you will make. It will affect your entire life. I want you to go to finaid.org, finaid.org. There are calculators there. It will tell you, okay, if I pay this over 10 years, how much do I have to pay? If I pay this over 25 years, which you can do if you have $30,000 or more in debt.
Don't do it, yeah.
What's the monthly payment, but what's the overall repayment? That's what you want to compare. And if you possibly can, but certainly if you have a job, you want to pay these off in 10 years.
Right, so you want to pay as much as you can, as quickly as you can. I mean, you might be attracted to the lower monthly rate, but that's going to cost you a lot more down the road.
Oh, overall, you can just use the calculator. And by the way, if you sign up for an automatic repayment, when you do sign up with your lender or servicer, you'll get a deduction, most of them a quarter percentage point, in the interest rate if you sign up for automatic payments.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Yes.
Okay, what if your hardship, though? Can you further delay it? Are there ways out of it, or how do you do that?
There are ways out of it, and none of them is good because all of them do build the eventual amount. But there's several versions of income-based repayment, and if you do have a job that you clearly can't pay, they will create a monthly payment under income-based repayment that's less than 10% of your gross income. And by the way, you're trying to pay it back off in 10 years. If this stretches it out over 25 years and you've made the payments that are required, they'll forgive the balance of your loan.
Wow. In
this column, you'll see where to go for more information on that. Your loans can be deferred, but interest does accrue on unsubsidized loans, the Stafford loans and PLUS loans, so you don't want to defer those. And forbearance is kind of really the last resort because your loans accrue interest. It's just a disaster. So the problem is people don't take advantage of the 6-month grace period to figure it out, and that's your challenge. Find them. Calculate how much you can possibly afford to pay. This should be the priority, not the minimum payment.
Enjoy your graduation party. Take down the tent, put the cake in the freezer, and go pay your student loans.
Exactly.
Terry Savage, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, when's the last time you went to the mall? You know, the Orange Julius is gone. So are the anchors at the ends of the mall. The amount of available anchor space in this area and mall space has doubled since 2012. Carson's, of course, is a big part of that, and others as well, Kmart, Sears. And so the mall owners or developers are trying to figure out what to put into there. We've talked about it from time to time, and here to talk about it a little bit more is Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business. Frank, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, if we could just figure out a business that could take up that much space, fill it up, and make money, man, I think we could take over the world.
I'm thinking like a big bouncy castle.
I was thinking of a massive hot yoga studio.
How about both? You can bounce around while you're doing hot yoga.
Right. Bounce hot, bouncy yoga. I think there it is, the million-dollar idea.
What are we doing on the air, man?
We're ending our careers, basically.
Albie Galoon had an interesting story today. You're right in highlighting it. We've talked about this many times before, but there are a couple of interesting wrinkles, I thought. We're up to an all-time high in available retail anchor space. So that's the big box stores, 15.7 million square feet. That's from a prior record of 12.8 million last year. So there's really a hemorrhaming of these big box stores.
And it's not going to turn around.
Malls,
right?
Are scrambling.
It's not going to get better.
No, it doesn't think so. I don't think so. And one of the things that's interesting to me about this story is it talks about some of the creative solutions. We've already talked about how some mall owners have been putting up apartment buildings. But this highlights that CBRE recently brought North Shore University Health System in for a 35,000-square-foot pediatric clinic in a former Carson's Furniture Store at Eden's Plaza in Wilmette.
Right.
So there's those kind of things.
Can I just say that health chain offices and buildings are the mattress stores of the 21st century?
They're everywhere,
right?
Man.
I mean, they're more than McDonald's. I think they are everywhere. And so North Shore is what they're creating a pediatric center. It's right on the Edens. It's easily seen. You go by that big Carson's, which is kind of a freestanding store, but in a mall area.
Right. And then what's interesting to me in particular about this story is that Albee highlights that when that happens, when a non-retail anchor tenant comes in, the smaller, the Claire's Accessories and the Hot Topics and the Banana Republics of the world, they often have clauses in their contracts where they can get out or they can get a break on the rent. But CBRE is saying that, you know, most retailers out there realize that the world has changed and that this is an imperative, that there's no other way to do it. There's no great big retailers waiting in the wings.
Maybe because those small, right, so the idea is the smaller ones, you know, they're like the pilot fish under the sharks. They feed off the bigger crowds in some ways. And if those,
right,
if the big sharks aren't there, the crowd's not there. But those smaller stores also don't really have anywhere to go.
Yeah, where else are they going to go? Exactly. So they're kind of in a pickle. And so in that, you know, kind of spirit of experimentation, they're going to have to see how well these new attractors, if they're restaurants, if they're health centers, if they're health clubs, are going to play out in terms of generating traffic for these retailers, these small retailers.
I think we've talked about it before, but I'm still kind of surprised every time I read it that at Northbrook Court, they're looking to tear down the Macy's store and build an apartment building there. I mean, I thought Macy's was one of the stores that more than most was still viable.
Yeah, apparently not in that location. They have been closing some stores, not at, obviously at the breakneck pace of Sears. But yeah, they're looking at 300 apartments, a grocery store, a food hall, and a fitness center. Now, we see a lot of food halls in the Loop. I wonder how that concept plays out in the suburbs.
Well, I think
it's like a supersized food court.
Right. I don't know. But you have seen, you know, the suburban developments have become like little mini cities. I mean, I think of the Glen and elsewhere that's kind of what they develop into after the mall. So we'll see if that works. And is it CBRE? Do we go to them with our hot bouncy yoga idea, or how do we get this? How do we move this forward?
I think it's such a can't miss that somebody's going to call you and make us an offer before the end of the show.
Let's do a hot, bouncy yoga, and then we'll have a burger stand next to it because you burn it off, you put it back on, right? And the price of burgers are going up?
Yeah, so we're finally seeing a crunch on the commodity costs. I mean, we just heard Orion talk about the cattle futures, so this would be right up his alley, but meat costs are going up as much as 3%, according to McDonald's forecast. They were warning their investors Tuesday, and that's more than the inflation rate. So it's going to be, you know, more costly to buy a burger than most other things in terms of the rate of increase.
We talk about locally grown food, and we're going to talk about the Green City Market here a little bit later in the program, but it's actually a swine flu epidemic in China that is having an impact on meat prices around the world. I mean, that's one of the factors here.
Yeah, for pork, meat processors around the world are really in a rush to figure out where they can source because this outbreak has led to, you know, mass slaughter in China, and they can't then use those for meat.
Yeah, one more. Lynn Merrick wrote a story about the Ken Griffin, the Citadel chairman, and you know, and I talked to, I think, Dennis Rodkin about this a while ago, but how he sort of floated this idea that he might move out of Chicago, and he did a TV interview, I think, with Bloomberg and reasserted the fact that he's here to stay. I just think he's an interesting character in that he's a civic leader, certainly, but he's standing up, talking about education, about violence in Chicago, and about how he doesn't want to leave here.
Yeah, he really tamped down that notion of leaving Chicago in the interview. It said he's really committed to Chicago, even though his daughter goes to school on the south side of the school near where there's been gang battles with guns, as he says, nearby. He said, we're going to stand and fight for policies and changes that make the state better. So he, as you say, talked about educational opportunity, that there's too much inequality in the education system, and that the zip code you're born in dictates too much of your opportunity. So, yeah, he really took a very firm stand after those rumors, were floating around that he was going to move to New York.
I think he was floating them himself for a while. But, you know, we had some people on from Rush last week. You know, if you live in some West Side zip codes, your life expectancy is actually 16 years lower or less than if you live in the Loop. It is an amazing thing.
That is extraordinary in a advanced Western society with that kind of inequity. It's really shocking.
World-class city. Frank Sennett, thanks for talking. We'll join you again next week, okay?
Thanks, Steve.
Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's my favorite part of the show.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Lifestyle brands are a thing, like Nike, Patagonia, or Lululemon, and they're shifting retail into new spaces. And Lululemon is showing their latest move in Lincoln Park. In July, a new 20,000-square-foot store will open, offering plenty of athletic and athleisure apparel, but also food, drinks, yoga classes, and a meditation room. This is a store we're talking about. The CEO, Calvin McDonald, said that this is a first of an experimental flagship store that could lead to many more like it. You bring your laptop to this place, you'll never need to leave again. But the CEO of SMS Assist, Taylor Rhodes, is leaving his position, and Mark Schiffman, the former president and CFO, will be taking over that role. The cloud-based property management company is one of Chicago's poster children for the startup community, and their growth has been impressive, which Schiffman has seen much of. The unicorn is always going to be on our radar, so we're excited to see what it turns into next. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson, Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WG and sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, the rain is out. It's coming back tonight, but let's just pretend the skies are clearing. Saturday's forecast looks pretty good, and the Green City Market opens for its 20th season. Melissa Flynn is the executive director, and she's here in the Allstate Skyline studio. Melissa, nice to see you again.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, so that's a sign, right? If we can buy our vegetables outside, summer must be coming.
It's coming whether we're ready or not, and I think we're all pretty ready for it.
I think we're pretty ready. What vegetables can I buy in the 1st of May? I'm thinking asparagus.
Yes, absolutely. We had asparagus this morning. It's crispy, crunchy, and ready to go. We have ramps, which are foraged, so that's a cross between like an onion and a garlic.
I don't know ramps, yeah.
A lot of people don't, and it only is a few weeks, maybe 3 weeks of a season.
So it's foraged. How do people harvest that?
So our farmers, a lot of them have it growing wild on their land, and they'll bring it to market, and they're great with eggs. They add wonderful flavor to like a soup. They're fantastic.
And scape as well, right? Garlic scape. I love garlic scape.
Oh, garlic scapes are amazing in pesto, and it's such a great thing because garlics can, you can use every portion of a garlic.
This is the 20th year.
Yes.
Started by the Chicago Theater in an alley behind the Chicago Theater.
Yeah, our founder, Abby Mandel, started it with about 9 vendors and maybe that many shoppers.
I can remember, probably 20 years ago, reading an article about Abby Mandel in the Chicago Tribune Sunday magazine when things were just getting started.
And thank goodness we have come a long way from 9 shoppers.
There was 9 shoppers at the start?
Well, we always joke there weren't many more shoppers than farmers back then.
So where do your farmers come from?
Sure, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Wisconsin.
Okay, and a lot from Illinois, or is there a percentage from Illinois versus Wisconsin?
There's probably a smaller percentage from Illinois, but because we're at this point almost closer to farmland in Michigan and Wisconsin.
Because I grew up in Kankakee County, as I tell you every time I see you, and the Hoekstras and St. Anne and Wichard, and you know, a lot of farmers around there. Are they still doing well down there, those farmers?
Absolutely, and one of our wonderful flower vendors comes from St. Anne.
Oh, no kidding. Yes. The Gladiola Festival in Moments.
Yeah.
Don't forget that. So I was talking to, I think it's called Goat Tracks Farm, and they were down there, and they're raising now, not llamas, but they're getting fur from another, I don't remember the animal now, but they were in sort of the truck farming business and got out of it because of labor. They couldn't rely on labor. Is that something that you're hearing about?
Absolutely. It is always an issue for our farmers. It is really hard work. It's long days, and they need more and more people to help them.
And they're relying a lot on migrants coming in, right? And it's more and more difficult for them to come in.
Absolutely. So it is a bit of a crisis right now.
A crisis? And how do you mean that?
In that it's just harder and harder to get labor, and we can't bring good food to your table without having enough labor to help plant it, harvest it, weed it.
And that's the stuff about a lot of these crops that we buy at farmers markets. Mm-hmm. They're hand-picked.
They are indeed.
All right. So people show up on Saturday. This is the first Saturday. It's 2 days a week, right?
Yes. Saturdays and Wednesdays from May through October, 7 a.m. to 1 p.m.
And you're on Clark Street?
At Clark and Lincoln.
Okay. And so people show up this weekend, what are they going to find?
They're going to find, hopefully, rhubarb ramps, asparagus, garlic scapes.
Yeah, but you always surprise me because I think of a farmer's market as a place where you go to buy vegetables, and that's not the case. I mean, it is the case
yes.
at the Green City Market, but there's a lot of other stuff going on there.
Absolutely. So you can, of course, find an array of vegetables, but then you'll have meat, you'll have eggs, you'll have dairy, bread, incredible value-added products that our farmers make, jams, jellies, preserves, that type of thing.
You know, I'm thinking like of the vegetables that are, that come out of the ground in mm-hmm. the spring. We as Chicagoans are going to sort of come out of the ground this weekend and start to enjoy the summer.
It really is just a greatest gathering place in Chicago this time of year. Everyone is just dying to be back outside.
Melissa Flynn, the executive director of Green City Market. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much.